A very, very warm welcome to all our listeners across the globe. You're listening to Professor David Block, and every Tuesday from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m., I have the privilege of leading you perhaps on a different journey. Not simple razzmatazz, especially at this time of year, but a journey of achievement, a journey of purpose, a journey of fulfillment, a journey of wholeness. May I ask you this question today as we look up together? How whole are you? How healthy is your mind set? How submissive are you today? How entrepreneurial are you today? What is the degree of your backbone today? These are profound questions which we shall be addressing today on Looking Up with David Block. Do remember that you are most welcome to call into our studio here in Rivonia at any time. The local number is, well, the international number too would be 0861 555 189. You can also reach us in studio on Twitter. The Twitter handle is @cliffcentralcom. Many of our listeners prefer the WeChat channel, and the WeChat account is Cliff Central. On Facebook, another very popular medium to reach us is Cliff Central, and on Instagram, @CliffCentral. My personal Twitter handle is @StarryGalaxyMan. That's @StarryGalaxyMan. Feel free to join me as I share the central truths on the waves, the Twitter waves. I never thought that a professor would be ever caught tweeting, but my twins have taught Daddy how to tweet very well. And then also on Instagram, you can reach us @CliffCentral. My personal webpage, for those of you who want to read more about what we do and reaching for the stars and how to reach for the stars, is as follows: www.davidblock.co.za. I began the broadcast this afternoon here in South Africa by asking some key questions dealing with levels of attainment and also dealing with levels of personal fulfillment. My esteemed guest in the Rivonia studio at Cliff Central today is a man who I have very great respect for. And his name is Keenan Groos. Keenan, a very warm welcome to the Cliff Central studio.
Good afternoon, Prof. How are you doing?
I'm just looking up. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, very good, very good. Good to be here, and I'm glad to be on your show.
Well, it's just awesome to have you here. I'd also like to welcome, while I am introducing you, your beloved parents, Gerhard and Christina Groos, two people for whom I have the utmost respect for, but also a great degree of personal warmth between your parents and myself. Now, Keenan, just to start the ball rolling, I'd love to, if I were to give the show today a title, I think it would be as follows: Are you hungry, and how hungry are you? Are you hungry, and how hungry are you? So before we get into that phase, we need to get into, you know, every broadcast has its phases. There's the courting phase and the honeymoon phase and so forth. So we're going to start off very gently, Keenan. You tell me and you tell all our listeners, and again, I'm so proud of Gareth Cliff because he told me just before stepping into studio, he told Keenan and I that since August, he's had 2.5 million podcast downloads. That is clearly a new trend in the whole of radio and then moving on to the digital domain. Congratulations to Gareth. It really is awesome. And we'll touch on that in a moment. But Keenan, your background, first of all, where did you grow up, your educational background, and so forth?
Thank you, Professor. Again, going back onto the topic of today's discussion, are you hungry? I believe we just had lunch.
Yes, indeed.
I'm joking. Prof, yes, it's a good point that you bring across there. And as mm-hmm. I said, we will get into it as we carry on the, through this hour.
Mm.
On the topic of are you hungry, basically motivational.
Absolutely.
Where I'm going to is that are you motivated? So let me start from basically from where we come from or where I come from. As mm-hmm. as you know our family now for mm-hmm. for quite a few many years. Mm-hmm. You've taught my brother and mm-hmm. Yes. So again, education size. My background started off in Germiston, mm-hmm. grew up there, mm-hmm. went to Germiston High School, then basically moved across to Wits,
mm-hmm.
where we basically actually got to meet you. At Wits.
Yes, at the university, my beloved University of the Witwatersrand, headed by Professor Adam Habib, whom we've had the privilege of interviewing on our show. Now, that's where you sort of were nurtured, was it not, from those Germiston days?
That's right, yeah. Basically, again, it started off in our younger years, where it came up to end of grade 12 or matric in those days. What are you going to do? The big question that came up, it's a very daunting question.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very good question. Mm-hmm. Where do you go forward in life?
Absolutely.
You know, what do you want to do and how
Absolutely.
Do we go forward? There's a personal gain as well as obviously a gain to society.
Yes.
What do you want to do?
So, yes. What do you want to achieve and do and be remembered for?
And basically motivated. You know, you need to do something. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was sitting around and basically had to make a call. I was very interested in obviously the aviation background. I was quite active in those days. Also with engineering, I was very intrigued how things were put together.
Mm-hmm.
How do we go forward? You know, mm-hmm. how do we better mankind?
Mm-hmm.
So the decision in those days was then let me go into engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult. Applied at Wits.
Mm-hmm.
They immediately said to me, maybe you should choose a different career.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to motivate myself to get the marks required because mm-hmm. they have a quite a strict entrance requirement.
Absolutely.
So it's not just a walk in the park to try mm-hmm. and get into there.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to motivate it. Again, was I hungry? Yes, mm-hmm. You had to do something.
So you were hungry, if I may interject,
yeah,
to
no problem.
Know how things work.
Exactly.
You were hungry to move in the vistas of the unknown.
Yeah.
How does element A fit into element B to into element C? Am I correct, Keenan?
Exactly. As I said, a lot of my friends at that time, we were 18, they did not realize what that meant. Engineering was very complicated, and it wasn't exactly your most popular,
your easiest domain,
or the most popular thing mm-hmm. to go into. You know, mm-hmm. it was a difficult choice. You know, mm-hmm. we you know, it's not an easy field that I decided to go into.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, I got motivated. I did all the extra subjects required to get into the field.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, got the marks and. Arrived at Wits in 1999. Started there thinking that the first day we're going to go straight into the labs where all the good stuff does, where all the fourth years hang out. I was quite mistaken. They put us straight into the central block. We started with maths. So the very
yes.
first subject I ever did was maths first year. So
yes.
Even that day, I got home that day, decided, is this the right choice for me? Because I decided, mm-hmm. well, we wanted to play with all the cool things that were mm-hmm. there in Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as you get older or you mature in university, you realize very quickly that there's certain things that you've got to take, a bitter pill.
Especially if you're hungry.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So there are bitter pills you've got to take to do mm-hmm. the whole subject. Mm-hmm. And eventually got through to fourth year, And I basically graduated then in undergrad of in aeronautical engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Still a very good passion of mine. Mm-hmm. On top of that, then I decided to carry on. I have a big interest in alternative energies.
Mm-hmm.
Also very close to me. How do we go forward in life? You know,
mm-hmm.
we can continue on the cycle that we are at the moment, burning fossil fuels and mm-hmm. Yes, we can do that till the lights go out. Mm-hmm. We'll touch on that lights going out just mm-hmm. now as we've got mm-hmm. on our agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So, we need to come up with a different way. Again, motivation to get somewhere in life, you know, different ways of energy, you know, modern and newer types of energy, different
of course,
ways of powering
our
lifestyle. So I had an interest in doing that. So I ended up doing a master's degree in alternative energies, mm-hmm. which is basically deemed as a mechanical
mm-hmm.
master's in mechanical engineering. So that's just the background, you know, not too much boring on that. Education.
Now, of course, this of course leads on to something very interesting in my mindset, because I have the privilege, Keenan, of course, from time to time, of addressing large audiences and small audiences in South Africa and further afield. And it always occurs to me that when I am seated in the Airbus or whichever aircraft I happen to find myself in, there's a tremendous amount to learn as I sit down about what's happening in the cockpit. I know you are you fly yourself, and I'd love you to lead us into some of the key lessons which you no doubt would have enacted, some of the key decisions you would have enacted with regard to piloting an aircraft, because I recall once flying to Cape Town. And British Airways invited me to be in the cockpit. And I was just so struck by many things. First of all, this. The pilots were people, whether they be men or women, were people of great backbone. They sat up straight. They were filled with enthusiasm. They were hungry. For what were they hungering? They were hungering for a different flight, a flight which was different. They were going to Cape Town. They hadn't been to Cape Town before, the specific crew. They had come from the UK and had flown around Europe. And what struck me is that these were people with a dream. These were people with a vision. These were people with motivation. These were people with joie de vivre. These were people who wanted to give their passengers an expert ride. But I was the passenger, of course, even though I was in the cockpit. I was a passenger, one of many. And it strikes one that, you know, on autopilot, things can just go so right. But sometimes on autopilot, things can go so wrong. And that's what interests me, is how these pilots know, by means of training, exactly what to do in crisis mode. Now, when you are hungry, in a career, for example, there will be many crises. Why don't you lead us through your personal journey, Keenan, of flight, of flying, and then encountering the unknown and looking up, handling crises moment by moment, but almost instantaneously.
That's very well put there. As I said, when going through my training, well, the education, I shared a strong passion, which I still do today, of the aviation industry. And exactly what you said. So I've combined passion together with the science behind the flight, you know, and especially at an engineering level. I spent quite a few years working on together with Airbus and building their magnificent aircraft.
Wow, so you actually worked with Airbus.
Yeah, we worked very mm-hmm. close. Mm-hmm. And we did quite a lot of work. I had the privilege of being at Airbus Bremen for quite a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, if we can split it into two things about flight or aviation, is you get your passion. As you mentioned, the hunger for pilots, which I am myself, you got to get up in the morning and you got to want it. You got to be hungry. You got to do something. You got to want a. Well, again, it's easier for a pilot. He's passionate about what he wants to do, so he's motivated to do that. Mm-hmm. Going back to the equipment or the aircraft he flies, it's a complicated,
highly complicated
group of systems that are so interacted with each other in modern flight today that they get very complicated, and you've got barely seconds if something does go wrong. They are extremely safe, and the probability of them going down is extremely high, is low. So basically, it comes down to I've spent time building these things, these machines.
Awesome.
And
awesome.
We've put in obviously a lot of time and effort with the redundancies that they need and require and that. Mm-hmm. So as you mentioned, flying on autopilot, things work smoothly. If they do go wrong, you need that highly motivated pilot who actually does not think, he just reacts.
Right.
Which comes from pure training.
Right.
You need to be a person that is extremely sharp, extremely fast.
And disciplined.
And, of course, discipline is probably key. Mm-hmm. You've got to walk through your training, highly disciplined. The moment you start cutting corners in that field, things go wrong, and they do go wrong horribly. Mm-hmm. But again, it comes down to the discipline, the motivation of these guys, these men and women that fly these machines. And we've got a lot of respect for them, and they do an extremely good job. So on that background, you know, as I mentioned before, those machines are complicated. And
And, of course, as you say, and correctly so, it's a highly complex system, interactive system, and you can put it on autopilot. But herein lies a question for our listeners across the globe. Are you on autopilot today? Are you simply cruising along with no goals and no motivation? Are you on autopilot today, or are you actually in crisis mode? Now, if you're on autopilot, there are great dangers. I know in my own personal career, Keenan, if I'm on autopilot just cruising, I know that I am not at the cutting edge by any means of my dreams, my aspirations, my goals. If I'm cruising, I'm not hungry. I know that it takes tremendous drive and effort to be at the cutting edge. So you've got the autopilot mode, the cruising mode, the comfortable mode, the need met mode. But then you have a different mode, and that's the mode which I appreciate about you, hearing of your expertise in Airbus and so forth, and piloting as well, is that you understand that the real acid test of a person's character is when they're not in autopilot mode, but in the decision-making mode, moment by moment by moment. Am I correct, Keenan?
Yeah, definitely. Again, as going back to the whole thing, motivation is what we need. You know, human beings, we need to be motivated. We need to do something. You know, we need to get up in the morning and do something constructive. We need to
at the cutting edge, right?
Yeah, you got to follow your passion. You got to follow your dream. You got to help society.
I agree.
There's a lot of things that you can, you know, we can do selfishly. But we need to give back to society as well. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, you can go about your daily business on an autopilot, which is what most of us do. You know,
most of us
we get caught in it. We get there's a classical word for it, and it's called the rat race, which we all belong in. There's got to be a way that you know, you yourself as an individual can get out of the rat race. You're not going to do that if you're not hungry or if you're not motivated.
You know, the philosopher Kierkegaard said it so well. He wrote a chapter Duncan, called Duncan is my audio engineer. You are listening to Professor David Block, and we are interviewing Keenan Groose on the broadcast on the show, the digital streaming, Looking Up with Professor David Block. And our studio number is 0861-555-189. The WeChat account, Cliff Central, Facebook, Cliff Central, and Instagram at Cliff Central. But I'd like to come back to that whole theme again, as you say, of hunger and of cruising. Mm. And Kierkegaard wrote a chapter called The Individual. And in that chapter, Kierkegaard says, never ever follow the herd. And I tend to think in my field of expertise, you know, thinking of the great minds, Newton and Einstein and so forth, that they never ever followed the herd. These were men with vision. These were people with drive. These were people who stayed at the cutting edge. These were people who left a legacy. I often say to people around the world, in 100 years you're not here anymore on Terra Firma, what legacy will you be leaving to your children and indeed to the world? Think of Thomas Alva Edison. Think of him trying that 3,000 times before developing the first practical electric light globe. And what did he do? His legacy is that he lit up the world. And my challenge to all our listeners, Keenan, is, are you lighting up your world? Not your home. Are you lighting up the phase space of your world? And that's something which I love so much in just watching you grow all these years, Keenan, is that you do love to stay and move at the cutting edge. But now, of course, you have got great contacts with WITS, as do I. I'm a professor there. Tell me about the standards at universities today, and especially at WITS, for those of our listeners who might be thinking globally so about standards worldwide regarding aerospace, aeronautical engineering, and mechanical engineering.
Yeah, one sec on that. I'll come right back to that. I just wanted to bring an example of where we're sitting today is a perfect example of a motivated person, Gareth himself, who built up. He broke away from the crowd. He built up Unradio, as he calls it.
He did.
So mm-hmm. there's a good example already mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. we're sitting in a new environment.
Absolutely.
Of not broadcasting.
Absolutely.
You know, through the standard channels.
And he could have remained in his comfort zone, but he didn't.
Yeah. So there's another good informative mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. basically a guy who stuck out from the crowd.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Going back to WITS, yes, good point. Again, WITS has always been a very good university. Our many good professors, as we know, have come from there and mm-hmm. have taught. And what I enjoyed about my years there was the way that we were taught from fundamentals, principles of flight, most mechanical things, which are, Newton's laws, gravity, those type of things, which are constant. Mm. They are taught to you properly. Mm. They do not change.
Right.
So for us to, or the guys to have grasped it 50 years ago, does not make a difference in today. Mm-hmm. So standards should remain the same. We are not ever changing those laws. They are bound. They are in concrete.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So coming to this, as you mentioned, the standards, how do we go forward? How do we train people? Mm-hmm. Why are standards dropping everywhere if mm-hmm. we're looking?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting point, and somehow I don't think we're going to solve that here mm-hmm. today. But the fact that I'm an external examiner as well. Every mm-hmm. year I do fourth years.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you know, the internet helps and doesn't help us.
Mm.
We get a lot of people copying and just putting stuff on in the older
days. Stick and paste, yes.
Yeah, I have seen a lot of that. And mm-hmm. it's what we call filler, you know, and the guys full pages and they drop off a 200-page report and you think you guys spent 3 months doing it, but he actually spent 4 hours. And that's
I've
what
seen
I've
that
noticed.
All the time.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, you know, how do you market? Because it's, do you go along plagiarism? do you go along? Has a guy learnt anything? You know, he's just taken off stuff that's so easy to copy, you know. Mm-hmm. So those things I've noticed quite a bit that the guys are doing is that, you know, we tend to make life easier for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Again, that whole topic of motivation is not coming in. People are too quick to sit back and say, I'll just copy something quickly. Mm-hmm. Again, the whole standard comes to motivation because you get taught those principles which are cast in stone. They do not change. So it doesn't make life always difficult, any difficult in engineering. I can understand these other fields, medical fields, which they have to be constantly evolving, again, because things are changing all the time. So I understand it's a bit more difficult there. But your basic principles in engineering remain the same. So why are our standards dropping? Mm-hmm. You know, in certain areas. I'm not, as I said, don't quote anything I'm saying here today. Mm-hmm. But what I have noticed, and so I don't know how to go about it. I don't know how we can basically get motivation into people. That's a personal decision. You got to be motivated to do it yourself because we are so focused on the degree, the actual piece of paper, that we are not actually learning what that thing meant. Mm-hmm. You know. The day
that is so true. I mean, I was asked by Professor Habiba, a vice chancellor, to address a certain group of people. Sitting next to me was Mr. King of the King Commission. And I just sensed in meeting Mr. King that here was a man with tremendous vision, tremendous, you know, he was just so hungry at. I'm not sure if he's in his late 70s or early 80s, but what struck me is that here's a man who said that before Christmas, he's got 3 overseas trips. Here's a man who reminds me of Professor Ken Freeman Keenan, who's the father of dark matter in our universe, a man well in his 70s now, and who probably travels overseas once per week, and I'm not exaggerating that. As I'm talking to you right now, he is in India. And is well into his 70s. So it strikes me that you can be 30 and on autopilot. You can be 40 and on autopilot. And you can be 75 and moving, scratching, being at that cutting edge, not cruising, not allowing anyone, including one's husband or wife, to dictate one's dreams, one's visions of steering the wind and the waves. One has to move at the cutting edge. Mr. King keeps on scratching at the cutting edge. And I think that that's what really has caused the lack of standards and a drop in standards generally globally is that people, Keenan, tend to rely on technology. They become lazy. Their brains become totally lazy. I had a student and I asked him or her the distance to the sun and they calmly replied, 40 kilometers. Now, I think, Keenan, you would know that if the sun, Duncan, were 40 kilometers away, we'd be baking, frying, and boiling simultaneously. But it doesn't make sense to have the sun 40 kilometers away. But somehow, because we've made a mistake on our laptop or our calculator that our beloved mommy or daddy gave us for free, together with our free 4x4 and everything else, I grew up in very different eras when we worked for our degrees. We worked very hard for our degrees. We were very proud of the piece of paper. If any of us said the sun was 40 kilometers away, we would have been expelled on the spot. So I think that technology does have a large part to play in this, and especially the word L for laziness. Now, moving on to another topic, we spoke of Thomas Alva Edison, who lit up the world, Keenan. And yesterday, you know, Duncan, I was driving along Henrik Potgieter and all the lights were out. Now, it's very interesting is this. When the lights go out, it's very rare to find a pointsman. It's very, very rare to find a pointsman. But when traffic fines need to be issued, it's extremely easy to find 10 Metro Police on your tail. But as this is unradio and uncensored, yesterday I drove for kilometers. All the lights, the robot lights, were out, and you could not see one pointsman on duty. Now, Heidi, I know that you get very worked up. That's Heidi Gruse when I talk about these matters, because you feel equally frustrated as I do. That's Keenan's sister, Heidi. But, you know, I put this down to laziness, not only in regards to pointsmen on duty, but I'd like your input as an engineer as to what is happening in our country. Clearly, unlike Edison, who lit up the world, things here are growing darker, literally speaking. What's actually happening in this phase space, apart from salaries of CEOs increasing?
Yeah, that's a very touchy, good point you're bringing
and
up.
And it's
right
unradio and uncensored, so go for it.
Okay, here go the gloves off. yes, good point. Again, everyone's fully aware of the situation in terms of load shedding. A good point we brought up over lunch, why load shedding in summertime? You know, why wasn't it in the middle of winter?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It comes to a point we'll carry on a little bit later on about planning.
Yes, good.
It's a lot to do on the engineering level. If I had to analyze what should be going on, what's going on, it's purely comes down to your maintenance schedules. You know, that's what we have been told by the authorities, mm-hmm. that's what's busy going on.
Mm-hmm.
Again, weather does play a bit of a part of it. So in their defense, probably, you know, a little bit of a colder snap that popped out of nowhere. But contingent plans need to be in place.
Yes.
You know, we've got hydro systems
planning.
That should, you should not use your hydro generation plants to use as a continuous. They
Absolutely.
Use that for your top up. So if there is a spike that pops out of nowhere, they start up a hydro pot within a few minutes. So again, it'll come down to high-level planning are the guys, are they even going through with their plans?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was talk about them even getting their own load shedding schedules wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, we know how frustrating it is. We'll plan. We move stuff around, deep freezes, defrost, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That, okay, fine, we're in this position. You know, we can jump up and down if you don't have a generator.
Right.
Which is also very expensive to run.
Mm-hmm.
But you get a plan and you say, fair enough, we'll give you guys some grace and tell me when you're going to switch the power on so I can do my own planning.
Mm-hmm.
And they get that wrong as well. Mm-hmm. So that is frustrating to all of us at the moment.
Mm-hmm. You know, would you say it's maintenance?
I would definitely. Well, end of the day, mechanical device is not working. Something's gone wrong. You know, silos are collapsing. Guys do give lifespans. You know, anything mechanical will break.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly like an aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
If you do not do a maintenance, I guarantee everything will come out the air.
Right.
So they use exactly the same turbines, you know, the same principle in the gas turbines as well as the steam generator turbines.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be replaced. They need to be maintained, which means obviously while they're being maintained, they've got to be off the grid, which means you've got to allocate, you know, relocate the power through different grids, through different power stations.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just say all of them are being maintained at the same time.
Right.
So again, it's a massive it's a massive planning that needs to be done.
Right.
So yes, obviously, you know, power means the mechanical issues with their generating plants. And why aren't they working? Because they're not maintained. That's my personal opinion on why we don't have the power. And again, it does not, you can't go down to the corner cafe and buy a power station. You know, these things take 10 years to be built.
But you know, there's very interesting analogies here, Keenan, and that's the following, is that it teaches us a very important lesson, is that you know, the Bible says, without a vision, the people perish. I would also say, without a plan, people die. Stations and silos stop working. You know, my career, Keenan, and yours, didn't just happen. I decided to become, study the morphology of spiral galaxies and enter the field of applied mathematics. But that took a tremendous degree of planning, not by my father, not by my mother, but by myself. It took planning. I couldn't say to myself, well, hopefully, you know, in 10 years' time or in 8 years' time, I'll be awarded my PhD. That will never happen. I tell my beloved students at WITS, 250 of them, Keenan, that knowledge doesn't osmose from my head into their head. One has to plan. You have to wake up in the morning and have a plan. What is it I want to achieve? We see electricity and grids falling apart across our country. And as you have said, and you have got all the expertise in this area, I have none in this specific area, of electricity and so forth, but the planning and lack thereof, one has to maintain one's career. One does. One has to prune one's career. What branches, listeners, do you have growing on your tree today which need to be pruned? You know, Keenan, as I watch gardeners, I'm always amazed how they take trees and prune them. It seems so harsh on the tree and sometimes so drastic on the tree that some of the choicest of branches, apparently, to the pruner, are not the choicest of branches and need to be cut off because they're taking off too much sap from the tap roots, and they know that the choicest fruit will not endure. And so the pruner comes and with his pruning devices comes Keenan and takes that tree and takes those apparently beautiful branches, but side branches which are taking off sap from the tap root, and they are causing them, they're diverting energies. And I think that that's perhaps what we're having in this country, is energy is being diverted. So we were without power in the Northcliffe area, so Cape Town might have power. It's a diversion of energy. I do not believe in diverting energy. I believe in mainstream energy throughout the country. What would your thoughts on that be?
No, very true. Yeah, coming back to your planning point, planning is planning basically comes down to your daily life. You know, there are people of, you know, that say, well, why plan? You know, just live life. It's very tricky. You know, you got to plan basically your every step. You know, guys are always on about financial planning. You know, are you going to get to the end? Are you going to make
absolutely?
Are you going to be a burden on the people around you?
Absolutely.
You know? So that's one part of the planning. You know, everything. You know, how do you plan your route from your house to your work, you know, now especially.
Absolutely, that's beautiful.
Especially today.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a nightmare in planning my route from the Rivonia studios back home without any power. It's a nightmare. It can take me up to 1 or 2 hours to get back home from Rivonia to Northcliffe. I mean, it literally is unheard of. But we have a very interesting question here, Keenan, and let me just read it to you. You're listening to Professor David Block, and I have the great privilege of interviewing an esteemed friend of mine, Keenan Groose. And I've come to know and admire the Groose family very much. Heidi Groose, Robert Groose, and their beloved parents, Gerhard and Christina Groose. Now, the question is this. It's rather a statement, but something we can comment on. This is a question from Inappropriate, and I believe his name is indeed Inappropriate. So I'll have to comment on that just now. But Inappropriate writes or asks, politicians and all the people in government don't know anything about science and technology. That's why they find it hard to meet the demanding needs of the people. Most of our challenges are technological and scientific, not political, quote unquote. Your answer and thoughts on that, Keenan?
Very good point. It's straight to the roots. Coming on from the management, there's two sides. For example, like my analogy with the pilot versus the aircraft. You've got a highly sophisticated system, ESCOM or an Airbus, that needs to be run by people that have been trained extremely well. You know, again, coming from the whole thing about the hunger of learning how to do the science, the science behind it, not just the paperwork. So now you got these people that generated these systems, men, women, whatever. They built these systems, these power stations.
Yes.
However, they can only go so far in keeping them running.
Yes.
They need planning from above as well.
Yes.
When that collapses, money dries up, maintenance schedules disappear.
Right.
They don't, and it gets frustrating. You cannot put in old parts into a new machine.
No, you can't.
They're not
going to
last long. Mm-hmm. So the listener is extremely right. You have to, how can I say, without being too blunt, we have to do something about this. We have to take back and get the right people, the right equipment for the right price. And how do we do that? That's a very good South African question at the moment. You know, so that we all have the lights, so that we don't have to be extremely planful tonight when we drive home. So there are people that are being trained through the universities that we've been through. Give them what they need. Allow them to do their jobs. Plan for them as well. When it says, guys, you've got December to take that plant apart and put it back together. What do you need? Those guys that are asking the questions, what do you need? They are not doing their jobs.
Yes. Well, you know, Keenan, I often feel in Duncan that I need some paint because I'm very white indeed and pale at that. They call me male, pale, and frail. But the important thing is that I believe that when one applies for a position anywhere in the world, Keenan. I've been a guest investigator and a guest academic at Harvard University, at Caltech, and many more besides. But I believe that these universities, especially the Ivy League ones, make choices on the basis of the best candidate for the position, the most highly skilled, the most highly trained. I remember once very vividly lecturing at the University of Fort Hare in Alice. And times were very tough. It was in the 1980s. Times were very tough indeed, Keenan, and especially for the students. Buildings were going up in flames. The Siskai police were exceedingly ruthless. They used to beat the students to pulp. And it was dreadful times to live in. But I was privileged to mentor one student in particular. And this student shone above the others. He just radiated passion. Let me say this. Passion is not taught. Passion is caught. I say it again. Passion is not taught. Never. Passion is caught. And this young student, I could see, provided I could light his candle or be an instrument to light his candle, he would achieve unprecedented heights. And I'm very proud to say today that this gentleman has grown up, got married, had a child who's now in London. But the interesting thing is that he's also chairman of one of the largest banks in the world. And what's very interesting about that is he was hungry. He was hungry all along. Now he controls billions of dollars, billions of dollars. He attends the World Bank meetings and thus forth. But the key point is that he was the best person to guide this bank into the new era. And that's what I believe about education and about the corporate space, is that give space for everyone, independent of color or creed, to scratch at their cutting edge. You are listening to Professor David Block. I have the singular joy of interviewing Keenan Groose. Studio number 0861 555 189. The WeChat is the most popular feed to reach us on, Cliff Central. You can join me on at Starry Galaxy Man. We are going to take a 2 or 3 minute break now, listening to something which is very important in your life and mine, and that is the question of seasons. And of course, Vivaldi wrote so much about the winter, the composed music about the spring, the autumn, and the summer. 2 minutes of Vivaldi, and then we link up again with Keenan Groose. A very warm welcome again from Professor David Block, and you're joining me looking up with David Block. We have been covering multitudes of rich soils this afternoon here at cliffcentral.com, here in studio in Johannesburg, South Africa. And we know that, and we are so aware of people listening to us from Alaska, from Chicago, from Los Angeles, and from further afield. Now, of course, Keenan, one of the key issues is energy. But just before I harp on that point and focus on that point, I'd like to just congratulate Inappropriate yet again, because we both just were commenting during the break on how appropriate Inappropriate's question is. Politicians, he says, and all people in government don't know anything about science and technology. That's why they find it hard to meet the demanding needs of the people. And that's where I'd stop. The demanding needs of the people. Our people need water. Our people need roads. Our people need electricity. We don't need senior people in government, for example, to be driving fancy 4x4s. I've seen streets where my car hits a pothole. I nearly do a 4x4 flip, as it were. Yet the salary of the person in charge of the road affairs is earning a magnitude or two magnitudes more. I know of people who are earning 62,000 rand every day while I experience the glory or not the glory of going over some rather rustic potholes, some of which are so deep that you can swim inside them. So I salute Inappropriate for a most appropriate thought. Now, Keenan, with regard to energy, take us through in the next 2 to 3 minutes on sustainable energy, renewable energy, and these sorts of energies, you know, nuclear fusion, atomic energy, and so forth, solar energy. Clearly, worldwide, one is running out of energy, or the needs of the people demands energy.
Yeah, good question. I was just recently in Germany for a trade show for my current business that I'm in. And it's quite interesting to go through a country like that. They're on the cutting edge of new sustainable energy. They're looking down biofuels. They're looking down the roads of obviously solar. But for Europe, we've got mostly cloud cover that they're using solar, but they're using it. A wind turbine, wind generation. I believe they are steering away from nuclear power. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of controversy around
Absolutely.
What happened in Japan.
Absolutely.
So we do have we have got our work cut out for us. You know, I'm no expert in the field of energy mm-hmm. generation mm-hmm. or how we're going forward. Mm-hmm. But just in a mere comment, mm-hmm. we got to find cleaner ways. You know, we've mm-hmm. identified now that humankind can destroy this planet. Mm-hmm. It's a very reality that we are faced and generations to come. So, you know, we have to do something about it. We have to sit down and think, you know, so that we do come up with sustainable energy that can be filtrated into households and everywhere else. There is a cheaper version at, solar, for example, or with the modern LED lights, it makes life a lot easier to bring down the actual energy required per household, mm-hmm. you know, with solar mm-hmm. geysers and small
Absolutely.
Wind turbines and
mm-hmm.
things like that. So mm-hmm. slowly we're getting there. The technology is bringing us there. I don't know if we need to accelerate it, but the convenience of coal, burning coal and burning fossil fuels is still there. And it's very easy just to go to those stations and fill up. But something we have to do something on modern generation.
Now, Keenan, one aspect of your life which I find very interesting is you married to Natalie, and she's got a career, you've got a career, you both blossoming, you both entrepreneurs. Tell me about something more personal, your work-life balance. I mean, clearly, Natalie loves to work, you love to work, you love life, you love family, but you both are working. You both are at the cutting edge. I know Natalie is, and I know you are. You both pilots in very true senses of the word. Now, clearly, you've both, not just one, but both of you have struck a very delicate balance between work and life. But both of you have. It hasn't been left just to the one or to the other partner, but both are at the cutting edge. Tell me how you attain that day by day. Is it planning?
Yeah, definitely. It comes down to there are times where it is difficult. You know, in modern society, the pressures that are on us, especially when you have two company owners that have their own needs and requirements.
And, yes.
You know, it's not as easy as knocking off at 5 o'clock and things like that. So, yeah, and then, of course, you still got to get home and you got the two little ones reaping havoc at your house. Yes, it's very difficult and sometimes, but rewarding in the next. There are goals that we set each other, and, you know...
Do you discuss these goals at home?
Of course. You have to. You have to plan what we're going
to
do.
You have to plan.
For example, this week is my week. Natalie's in Namibia training up there. She's got a complement of about 100 and something teachers that she's training there at the moment.
So, in other words, you share.
We have to share.
You share. It's not that it's Keenan's baby or Natalie's baby, but you're actually sharing?
You have to. You have to. Take plan. You got to respect each other's dreams and passions and goals. You got to, you got to support each other. And you notice the more you support your partner, the more they support you, and things do work out a lot easier that way.
Mm.
We've taken on a lot this year in terms of our businesses, and that Natalie's starting a new training center now. So we've got that and other stresses of building a house and things I'll get on our shoulders at the moment. But you got to find a way, you got to navigate through the storms, and you basically just got to respect each other. And then, of course, a 3 and a 4 year old and a almost 2 year old. They're quite demanding, so you've got to give them a lot of time as well.
What you are saying, Keenan, if I hear correctly, is you listen to Natalie's dreams, but equally so, Natalie, your beloved wife, listens very dearly so to your dreams and helps you to aspire to your dreams, just like you assist her to aspire to her dreams. I think that's awesome that she's in Namibia, deeply involved with the Montessori schools, I believe, 100 people with her. I just find this whole issue of balance in your home a very poignant one indeed. The question of listening and of focusing on one another's dreams within the husband-wife unit.
That's right, yeah. And again, coming back to are you hungry, the motivation behind it. You got to be motivated from both sides, and we both are extremely motivated, so it makes life easier in that we're both tugging forward.
Yes.
The complication comes into how do we balance that tugging forward in your direction, my direction, our direction. So that's basically what we spend time on, and we discuss these things. And as I said, I've supported her a lot, and vice versa. You know, when I'm down and out, she supports me.
Awesome.
And that's how we do it. And you just got to make it work.
You've been listening to Professor David Block interviewing Keenan Groose. It's just been a singular joy and honor, Keenan, to have you in studio. The time has truly flown. Duncan, our audio engineer with us today, Palisa, our producer, and... the question I ask you is, are you hungry? How hungry are you? Are you in the comfort zone? Are you on autopilot? Or are you scratching at the cutting edge, leaving a legacy to light up not your home, but the world? This is Professor David Block signing out.